Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 40, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Peter from L.A.
And Allison, also from L.A.
Yay! Thanks for dropping in, guys. Figuratively speaking this week. The news we have is actually depressing for me, because people were bugging me about watching Terriers, and I finally started watching it, and now the show's canceled. Thank you very much, television world. You are evil and vindictive. The other thing is, I also, as you guys listening, know that I love Lie to Me, and it has also been canceled.
What?
Evil, vindictive, evil, vindictive TV world. I hate you. No.
That sucks. I didn't know that. Oh.
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm not happy. And then the only one that I actually feel that makes sense is next season's going to be the last season, The Closer, which means they've given them notice, they have time to wrap up the show, and they can do a good job. So I'm okay with that. I just don't like when you cancel my shows midstream, because Lie to Me is not going to get even... They're not even going to let them have a finale. And I figure if a show is in its third season, give them a finale. Let them wrap the show up. They're just not picking up the back nine of season three. So whatever they filmed so far is it. So we get no conclusion, no wrap-up, no nothing. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I mean, with The Closer, I mean, we'll talk about it when we talk about The Closer, but I think they are setting themselves up for, I mean, story-wise, I think they're setting themselves up for a good last season.
Right, and that's totally cool.
Yeah,
because
totally.
It's kind of like, well, how long can Brenda be in that position, and how long can all those guys be in that position without getting promoted, without something happening? And that totally makes sense, and I'm cool with that. But anyway, yes, I'm a little down right now. But the last piece of news, which is the only good thing out of the news that I have this week, is that next week the CW is running a Vampire Diaries marathon. So if you were planning on jumping into Vampire Diaries anytime, now's the time. Because basically, if you find season one, which is on DVD or wherever, crank through season one, make sure you record the marathon next week, because they're basically playing all of season two. And then we have a break till the end of January before season two comes back. So you can catch up with the series over this Christmas break. Please do so if you have not, so that you can enjoy our discussion. Lovely Vampire Diaries discussion. You guys have any news?
Well, I had a bit of information about IFC, the Independent Film Channel. They are no longer essentially the Independent Film Channel. They're going to continue being IFC. They're keeping the initials, but they are changing their program radically. It's going to be a commercial channel now, as opposed to their commercial free status before, with occasional sponsors. And the programming is going to shift away from, you know, independent films and art house films and things like that, to just, you know, a more generalized movie fare. You know, I mean, the kind of, you know, recent comedies that come out and things like that. They're basically trying to appeal to the, you know, 18 to 35 male demographic like every other channel. So it's essentially become a generic network, and they're going to have some original programming, most of which strikes me as being terrible by description. The only one that shows promise is Onion TV, which, you know, based on the Onion website. And that sounds potentially interesting. The rest of it, though, it's all turning into one bland, giant, Pablum-esque look, you know, like every other channel.
Tell us how you really feel. Let's get on to the shows. And the first one up is Walking Dead, and we have the finale of Walking Dead. And I'm curious, I'm going to open this up to Peter really quick, because your comments a couple weeks ago were pretty negative about what you thought, like they were going off track, and they added that, you know, you were worried that they weren't going to go by the book and everything like that. And how do you feel now that it's ended and you've got your finale?
Well, I was concerned when they introduced the, in episode 5, they introduced the CDC thing, And I was a little, I was nervous because I was like, you know, as a person who's read the graphic novel or still reading the graphic novel because it's an ongoing comic series. There's no, in the, at least in the 7 years that I've read it or 5 years or whatever, there's not really a, there's no government conspiracy. It's basically just about Rick and his, and the people he meets and how they go from town to town and how they try to survive in a world that, how they try to survive in the world when the world isn't really the world that they knew anymore. And that's what I really like about it. So when they introduced the CDC, I was like, this starts to feel a little like, this is, and then in the finale, you know, which was the episode we're going to talk about, they go into the whole, like, they meet the doctor and, like, he had this test and they're showing what a normal brain scan is. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, this starts to feel a little like there's something bigger behind it. And I personally don't like that. However, that said, I do think the show should be allowed to not be so literal with what the graphic novel was. I mean, I remember, you know, the first couple of Harry Potter movies, they were exactly what the books were, but then they kind of feel like books on tape after a while. So I understand the need to go, well, we're not going to do everything exactly the same, because if you want that, you could, you know, you could read the comic book. So I'm cool with some of the changes they made. But yeah, I was a little nervous about the CDC. But as we saw in the finale, the CDC thing was really basically a one episode thing.
Right.
So yeah, it wrapped up anyway. So I'm like, oh, all right. You know, except that near the end, I don't know if you guys noticed, the characters are trying to, basically the characters, we talk more about it, but the characters are trying to escape from a CDC building that's about to recently blow up. Mm-hmm. And the doctor whispers something to Rick.
Yes.
We don't, my wife thinks that what it is it has to do with the blood test.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm assuming she's right, because I was like, yeah, that makes sense, you know. The first instinct was because of the whole, the guy, I never forget this guy's name, but the guy who slept with the wife, who's his friend.
Okay. Right.
I don't know. I know Rick, and that's all I got.
Yeah, I forgot. I never knew that guy's name. But, like, Julia was like, oh, maybe what it is that the you know, he did the blood test, and the kid, the son, isn't his. And I was like, no, it's not that, because well, the kid exists before the affair.
Yeah, right. No, what I think that. It is, I think it's the wife, and I think she's going to be pregnant.
Oh.
I think that's what the secret is.
Oh, and that would, well, being pregnant in the middle of a zombie apocalypse is very inconvenient.
to say the least.
It's not the recommended thing to do. No, not really. And especially because, you know, it clearly would not have been Rick's kid.
Right. That would be a problem.
So
yeah, that's actually more of an obvious thing than the son not being his, because with a regular blood test he could tell that she's pregnant very easily.
Right.
Okay, that's not a bad guess.
That's a good guess, absolutely. But overall, I thought, and then you know, you guys could say, I thought, you know, they had no idea how huge Walking Dead. I mean, I think it's like biggest scripted cable, you know, ratings ever. Like, even the finale was even bigger, right? Like 6 million, or they got a six or something. It was insanely high. Mm-hmm. So they had no idea how big it was going to be. So when you watch the mini finale, it's only six episodes, it's a little kind of like, oh, well, all right. I mean, they escaped the building. They're okay. Life goes on, but doesn't really feel like a huge cliffhanger. But I mean, that's probably because they didn't know if they were going to do a second season. I'm assuming the second season, which is a full order, I think it's like 12 episodes, that probably will have a big cliffhanger, because that'll be more like what we're used to with, you know, a television show. This was more kind of, this was almost like a sampler of Walking Dead, ultimately. It was almost like, here's six episodes, what do you think? You know, and clearly people like it, so.
What'd you think, Allison?
I thought that this was the strongest episode that they've had since the premiere episode. My issue with Walking Dead through most of this is that I really don't care about the characters. They don't resonate to me. And in this episode, I actually started to care more about people and you know, feel something for their predicament. Like, you know, if one of them dies, it's a loss. And I really hadn't felt that before. They were just kind of there, and if they lived, fine. If they died, fine. And this time I actually got a chance to connect with them more. And I think also they did, the doctor who was there also made me feel something for him and his predicament, particularly when we discover the identity of patient 19.
Right.
When we watch the progression of the illness, the zombie illness, I thought that was really neat to watch. And also, I think it gave the audience finally a real answer in the sense of how widespread is this? You know, how much does it affect what's going on? And clearly now they know it's a global thing. There's no place they can hide, no place they can travel to. It's everywhere.
Right.
And there is no longer a functioning anything. And I got the impression, you know, because Peter was saying before about, you know, oh, there's like a conspiracy thing. And I think that this episode went a long way to dispelling that. It seems as though this was not a government project gone awry. They were just working on it and trying to figure out what it was, because they didn't have any idea of the origin.
No, I would agree. What I meant was more the beginning of getting to the CDC in the beginning of the episode. That was my fear. But yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
I think at the end, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, okay, it's not that. They're not going that route, which I'm happy with.
Well, one thing, I just want to get us to time again, but the one cool thing I really want to talk about real quick is the doctor fleshed out as a very real character very quickly, and his mood during the whole, everybody was celebrating because they have hot water and they have a safe place and they have food and everything like that, and his dour attitude through the whole thing was like setting off alarm bells for me, because if I had been alone all that time and then all of a sudden I had people, I would be a little happier. And I was like, what's going on with this guy? What the heck? And I like that the answer made sense, was logical, and he could have come off as crazy, but he didn't. He really came off as someone in his own mind trying to help them in an interesting way. And I think I said that knowing that everything is pretty much dead, and I said that if I was in that group and I didn't really have family and it was just me, I might have stayed and sat there and let the air burn. Because, I mean, the choice between a world filled with zombies where your fate is either becoming a zombie or being eaten by one, I think I like the idea of a quick burn myself. But
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, okay, go ahead. Because we're totally out of time.
I like the doctor character. He's new. He wasn't in the comic book, and I kind of wished he was able to keep going, because I was like, oh, he's a pretty interesting character. But
yeah.
So.
And the next show we want to talk about is Dexter.
I thought it was a great episode. It really ratcheted up the tension a lot, and you know, got certain things out of the way, and if nothing else, it finally killed off the Peter Weller character, and I was really, really, I practically cheered, just because, I mean, I was so sick of his character, and the way he was being played, which it looked like something out of another show. And another reason that I liked the way he died was he didn't have to say anything. Shut him up for the first time. It's a quiet death. Yay.
What was great is I was like, all right, you know this guy is going around killing people, and I give you points for tasing him and tying him up. Yes, that's all good. Mm-hmm. But he got too close, because he didn't know how dangerous Dexter was. And I don't know if he just assumed he was just a lab rat who was just going around randomly killing people without any skill.
Mm-hmm.
Or what, but he got way too, he got too close to Dexter, and that was the end. And I was just, I actually laughed during that little bit. But the one thing I thought about this episode, which was fantastic also, and actually frustrated me as well, was the cliffhanger, which I knew was going to be a cliffhanger, but I wasn't paying attention to the clock. So when it hit, it really felt sudden. And I was ready to throw things at my television, because I was like, no!
I think another reason why it felt so sudden was because this was actually a very short episode. I think it was only about like 45 minutes long, you know, and I got to the end of the thing and I went, it's done now? Because there was a whole lot of commercial space left at the end on my recording when I DVR'd it. And I realized, wow, this is a really short episode. But they packed everything very tightly into that little space. I mean, you know, we made a lot of progress
right.
in terms of story. And the one thing that seemed strange to me, though, was, you know, the now I'm blanking on his name, but the killer who is the leader of the
Chase, Jordan group. Chase.
Yeah, right. He his whole thing was that he never got his hands dirty.
Right.
No, he ordered other people. He was the manipulator.
Right.
So he got other people to do his dirty work. And now suddenly, I mean, to the point where actually there was a scene in one of the earlier episodes where his first victim, again, whose name I can't remember, she, who's working with him, she reached over and like touched his knee and he recoiled
right.
at that because he doesn't like physical contact. And now suddenly he is actually physically doing all the dirty work, and that seemed, I don't know, that seemed out of character to me.
Well,
it
no.
seemed like he would try. I mean, I know he's in a desperate position, but he really could have used the time better to just get the hell out of town.
Well, his thing is, you have to think about it from his perspective, which is he's got this huge empire. He's a rich millionaire. His backup plan is to get the heck out of town, but if he doesn't have to, he only has a couple people who are witnesses. If he can get rid of those people, he's fine. If he lets them stay alive, then he has to stay out of the United States. He has to give up his empire. And for him, it's all about power, and that's not acceptable. But the thing that I find interesting is, like you said, is he actually talks about the fact that he never does any of this himself. And
right.
It shows that he really doesn't really know what he's doing, considering mm-hmm. the mess he left behind
yeah.
at the woman's house. I was like, and the fact that he let Lumen get that knife shows that he's not experienced. And I think yeah. he left a trail, some of that blood is probably his. So he left the trail of his own blood, he left mm-hmm. Lumen's blood, he left a dead body, and it's just all just really, really
messy. And he left, I mean, there's his Learjet was waiting for him. I mean, like I said, the whole thing of how he could have just handled this by getting out of town, the jet had been waiting for him for an hour. And there's no way, even if he'd gone to plan and managed to kill Lumen and Dexter, there's no way he would have managed to then get to the Learjet in time.
Well, I got the impression that Lumen didn't show up at the house early, because she was waiting for Dexter. So they make mm-hmm. the call. And instead of Lumen and Dexter coming over immediately, she's trying to reach Dexter. She's waiting around. She's trying to give him time. And she doesn't show up as early as they want it. However, I have to say, what the heck would he have done if Dexter had showed up? Because he didn't really have a plan to kill everybody in that room. So I think that that's actually more worrisome than anything else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, like you said, he's not used to doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm excited about next week's the finale. I'm very, very excited. I cannot wait.
The finale is tomorrow.
Well, yes, but it's next week's episode. I was trying to go with the podcast here. The next show up is the finale of Boardwalk Empire, and I am sorry that you are the only one who has seen it.
No one to share this with, but it was a brilliant, brilliant episode. Absolutely wonderful. And it just took it in places that was just, you know, scary and leaves so much to happen for next season. And I just thought it was great. You know, they had, the kind of typical Scorsese murder montage to music, but it wasn't Scorsese who was helming this, but it was just the typical kind of thing he does, where you hear, you know, some kind of happy music or classical music, and you just see all these people being killed in various ways, and
so they went on a killing spree for the finale of the episode.
Well, the whole they've had issues for a long time. The D'Alessio brothers, who tried to kill Nucky, have been hiding out since then, and they managed to locate where they were and also make peace at least temporarily with Arnold Rothstein in Chicago. And he's between Nucky's people and Rothstein's people, which includes Al Capone. They were able to hunt down the surviving D'Alessios and their family, including the family who are not mafia connected, like the dentist and his look like about 13-year-old son. And just all of them systematically were killed off.
So was it a cliffhanger finale, or what? Did it feel like a wrap up, or what?
It you know, if they never had another episode, it could have been a wrap up. They are already guaranteed for next year, so they're coming back. But they reached a certain point that was really interesting. They've got characters who formerly were like the closest people to Nucky, and they're plotting against him now. The Commodore, Jimmy, and Nucky's own brother, because he twisted around and used him in kicking him out of being a sheriff and then bringing him back later, and he's pissed off. And so you've got all these people that Nucky actually still trusts, but who actually hate his guts and are plotting his overthrow.
That's what happens when you become the king. Everybody wants to take your head.
Now, I don't know how close to historical fact they're going to stick. Nucky Thompson is based on Nucky Johnson, a real political figure of the time, a corrupt political figure of the time. And if they try to keep it more historical, this little cabal is doomed to fail.
Well, don't think about it too much, because then you'll give yourself, you know, you'll spoil yourself. I don't like doing that.
But you know, the thing is, they've gone in other directions which are clearly not historical with the character, and they could do something completely different with that. So you just don't know. And they also brought up more things about Nucky's past, his wife and child, and how they died, and Margaret and Nucky, of course, the week before had a big blow up and had nothing to decided, you know, their relationship was over, and they came back together again in this episode. And I think the very last shot of it was them on the pier together after a party, and they're like very snuggly and everything as they watch the sun come up, but the looks on their faces are like, good God, what am I doing? And so it leaves it in an interesting place for next year.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a great episode. It's a great episode.
Okay. Now we're going to move on to the closer.
Right. I liked it. I thought I think that it's interesting that we just heard the news about how they're going into their final season, because you know, it looks like the next season is going to be all about Brenda taking Pope's job, right? And then I guess, right, assuming Pope would retire, do you think that's what would happen?
Well, I think where they left it off was they're giving Brenda a choice. I don't know if she would take it, but it does look like they're going to offer her Pope's job. And I love Pope, so I don't want Pope to be gone. Because I'm like, where would he go?
I mean, it could just be that could be the last episode of the show.
Well, that's true, too.
Be the, you know.
That is true. But
it was a good episode. It had is it Flynn? Is that the character's name?
Yes.
And then so Flynn in the beginning gets in this, like, you know, he brought a gun to a knife fight because like some guy like tries to kill him, and actually it was pretty good because, you know, we haven't seen the closer for a few months. It's kind of their like holiday season, you know, thing episode, and it was kind of, I didn't know if something bad was going to happen to him, so I was like, well, what the heck's going on? But I mean, he does get a little messed up. But I mean, he's he doesn't die or anything.
That fight went on so long, I was absolutely sure he was at least gonna get. I was terrified. Basically, I was sitting there just like gripping the couch, absolutely sure that something bad was gonna happen to him because the fight lasted so long. It was very tense.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. It was tense. I mean, the actual episode itself was fine. You know, then they go to find a guy, and there's a guy in prison who doesn't like him, and it all has to do with money. Actually, I did think one of the evidence things they did was that they're like, well, how come the money? There's a part in this episode where they find, like, I don't know, $30,000 or something like that, and the money is all dated from like the 90s. And that's how they start to realize, oh, it must be a convict, and that's the connection, this person went in jail. And a part of me was like, well, I guess, you know, note to convicts, always make sure you launder your money first, before, even if you've been saving it up in the clink, because they're going to find you that way. I thought that was pretty, I liked that. I thought it was pretty clever.
I liked at the end when she bet this guy that he was going to confess. And he's like, why would I do that? And then she totally tricked him into a statement where he didn't think he was confessing to anything, yet he was, and he gets to spend the rest of his life in prison. Thank you very much.
Right. But overall, good. The closer, it's another thing. It's season 7. It's been going on for so long. Or it's going to be season 7. It's not, like, as great as it used to be, but I still have affection for the character, so I like it, but... You know, it's not, I don't think it's like, you know, best show of the year. So I think it's fine if that's the last season coming up, you know.
The only thing I was going to say real quick is that Mary McDonnell as an addition to the show is fantastic, though it's kind of weird because her character is very similar to Brenda's character, where it feels like they shouldn't exist in the same universe. Like the universe is going to explode or something if they touch each other, you know, because they are the same person.
I always think Raider is way more political, though. All her movements are done in a political way, whereas I don't think of Brenda that way.
Well, that's true. That is true. Raider does think of politics way more, but just the whole walk into the room, take over, everyone must do what I say, I will roll over people. That attitude is almost identical, which is why they have problems when they deal with each other. But I love her. Absolutely love her. So, thumbs up for that. So, Closer, good episode. Moving on to Castle. Castle's episode this week was pretty good because it dealt with... Well, first of all, I didn't figure out who the killer was in the first second, which has been pretty much consistent. Like, the first person that they interview is usually always the killer. And this week was not the case because I totally didn't call the killer at all. They interviewed
him
in the middle.
Well, I think this time it was the fourth person they interviewed. Right. So they're holding off a little.
Yeah, but it was pretty cool because I didn't suspect him at all. Like, because they didn't even interview him as a suspect. He was just a guy that gave them some information. Thank you very much. And they walked off. I didn't think about him again, and then he was the killer. I was like, that was pretty good. And I like the whole bar with the secret passageway, with the secret basement, with the secret...
Oh, I love that,
All that was...
And the thing is, that's really legitimate, because the old speakeasies really did have, like, a whole series of tunnels connecting to different places so that they could, you know, transfer their booze without being seen. So that actually plays into a reality. They're always finding weird tunnels and things like that when they go through old buildings and discover, that was used for rum running.
Yeah, but also Castle has now bought a bar, so now they have like a hangout spot.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, and I like that better than, because I mean, Beckett showing up at Castle's house doesn't really work because then it's all, and plus she's got a boyfriend now, so that's kind of weird. But if she shows up at his bar, then that can be a social, casual occasion and they can hang out. And I was like, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got that. Oh, and then the whole singing at the end. At first, I was afraid it was going to be cheesy, but I grinned like an idiot during that whole thing. So I'm going to say it wasn't cheesy. It was actually good. Your thoughts real quick?
Well, I kind of echo yours. I thought it was a really fun episode. I loved the historical allusions, even though they changed names. You know, the character is, the mayor of New York was actually Johnny Walker. Again, these days it's got, you know, he has a gin named after him, Johnny Walker Gin. But I thought it was great, and I loved the bit with that little computer startup guy, millionaire, who was like all of maybe 12 years old, and bought this incredibly expensive, like one of a kind bottle of whiskey from the 19th century, and he drinks it with root beer.
Yeah, I don't drink alcohol, and I was affronted. I was like, oh my God. Like, I knew well enough to go, that's not good. That's not good. And Castle making love to the empty bottle of whiskey was disturbing on a couple of different levels. But it was still
hilarious.
Yeah, it was funny. All right. The next show I want to talk about is they had a very Merry Christmas version of the next two episodes, I think, of different shows we're going to talk about. And let me start off by saying I hadn't really had much Christmas thing other than seeing lights and stuff up around the neighborhood. So I wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, it's Christmas time. All right, cool. But I swear, man, after this week's of all the Christmas episodes, I'm tired. I'm like, I don't want to see another television show with a Christmas theme at all. Because I watched Eureka and Glee back to back, and I was ready to shoot myself. So,
oh, hey, I watched Eureka, Glee, and Warehouse 13's Christmas special back to back. How do you think I feel?
Yes, make it stop. All right, let's talk.
No more Holly, no.
Let's talk about Eureka real quick. We haven't had a Eureka episode since the summer, so right? It was good to have them back, but off the top, I have to say I was confused from a timeline perspective because the whole point of this episode was the sheriff is talking to these kids and telling them about the last Christmas that they had in town and what happened, but I was like, how do you remember that? You shouldn't remember last year because you just joined this timeline. You know, mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, and the last time we did this. And I was like, I'm confused. Is this a year even further than the last time we saw you over the summer? Like, what? You know, because it, well, we obviously were in the alternate timeline. And the story is everybody's in their alternate job positions. Mm-hmm. And, but I have to give them credit. What's a weird thing is because it's in an alternate timeline, when they do flashbacks, you're going, what the heck is going on? Because you've never seen it. So that's mm-hmm. kind of cool, but I was confused on how he could possibly remember the flashback story unless he totally made it up.
I was thinking was that it was a made-up story.
Yeah, if he totally made up that story, okay, sure. That's the only way that works for me, is if the whole story was fabricated, which is possible because it had a serious Santa Claus-y feel to it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's fine, but I got the impression that they were trying to convince us that he didn't make it up.
Hmm. I think you could take it either way. I mean, like I agree with you as far as the timeline is concerned. It would not make sense for him to remember something from the alternate year when he personally never experienced it.
Right.
Because his memories have not been altered. So, you know, that was kind of weird. I thought overall, though, it was a fun episode. It was quirky, and the only things that drive me crazy, as they do with pretty much every Christmas episode of anything, is that, you know, they shove the holiday spirit pathos down your throat, and, you know, oh, isn't this precious and Christmassy magical, and, you know, things like that, and that's when I just get, I roll my eyes and I get sick and tired. But when they stick to it being cute and funny,
right?
That's when I like it.
Yeah, and I figure the Christmas episode gives you a time to give your own twist to the story or something. And that's pretty much what they were trying to do. They were trying to twist the whole Christmas story, and their version of Santa Claus is kind of interesting. And they got shrunk down. Like, I like them figuring out that instead of that big glowy ball growing, that it was actually them that was shrinking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the bit with the little fruit cakes. Are you telling me this is an entire fruit cake? Do you know how many calories I've taken in? That was awesome.
That was fantastic. Oh, my God. And basically, he destroyed the town because he wanted to shrink the fruitcake. Like, the crisis that created this problem.
I love that. And I loved the carolers every time he said Christmas.
Yes, and I was actually, because I was like, he's going to say Christmas, and he would say it, and the carolers would show up. That was all, that was cute.
Like, that was great,
stuff,
I loved
all the stuff was cute, but I could have dealt without the reindeer and the,
yes,
the faux Santa, though the faux Santa Claus was a little bit interesting, even though I thought it was kind of over the top of my head to let me know, like, yes, that guy's Santa Claus, yes, I get it, he doesn't have a beard, but he's very obviously Santa Claus. All right, thank you, next. But I thought some of the other stuff was good, and I liked Joe being Secret Santa, giving people their presents.
That was cute. I liked that.
Because I wouldn't have guessed that it was Joe. So, yeah. All right. Cool. So I'm looking forward. That's the last Eureka episode we have until next summer. So it's so weirdly random that we just get that Christmas episode. But that's cool. Looking forward to more Eureka. I still, you know, still love the show. All right. Next up, we want to talk about Glee and their Christmas episode.
Yes. Now, I've actually heard, you know, it seems to be getting a very mixed reaction. I actually liked it a lot. I mean, as Christmas episodes go, it had a very flimsy storyline, but then that's Glee. And it was totally over the top, but again, that's Glee. And I loved their choice of music. That I thought that, you know, that each selection that they had fit the particular moment, the particular scene, and you know, some of them just really made me smile, especially when they opened with the Island of Misfit Toys song from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I thought that was cute.
I thought it was okay. I guess I'm one of the mixed people. I thought the episode before was, I really liked last week's episode. This week, I liked, I liked the Britney thing, and I did like the Misfit Toys opening. You know what didn't really work for me? I kind of felt like the Sue Grinch thing was a little too forced or something.
Oh, you see, you're using my foreknowledge of telling you what I like to plot against me.
I forgot the character's name, but you know, how Sue has the helper, the one, right, the cheerleader, the cheerio that always, like, I really like her character, and so her being the reindeer, like, I like that, but the actual, you know, I'm being evil, and then of course at the end, I was like, yeah, it's all right. Like,
I didn't like her necessarily switching, but I really liked the whole putting on the makeup, being Grinch, destroying the trees, creeping through the halls. I thought that was fantastic. That was, because I actually was bored up until that point.
Like, I guess I was the opposite. I thought it was too literal. Like, I mean, I know saying that Britney believes in Santa Claus, even for Britney, is quite a stretch, but at least it's more with a character that I like. And I do like Sue. Obviously, I like Sue. I guess it was a little too on the nose. It was too like, oh, of course she's Grinch. You know, like, I guess that was my issue.
Well, I like the fact that she got the idea. First of all, I liked her idea of stealing all the presents and being Secret Santa and everyone.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, yeah.
That was great.
You can't take these gifts away. Like, that, yeah, that was great. But that's before she becomes Grinch. That I did like. I agree.
Yeah, but I thought that was funny. But then I liked her coming up with the idea of being Grinch and then doing it. Like, that was really cute to me. And the song.
And they even had the little Cindy Lou Who moment with Britney.
Right.
Yeah.
Which,
I don't know, I liked it. I thought it was cute. I mean, I agree with you, it was extremely literal, but it just, I don't know, it worked for me because Sue is Sue, and I knew where everything was going to be going, you know, with as soon as they started singing the little Who song at the end, you know, it's like, oh, of course, and then they'll come in and see that Christmas was not stopped and all of that. And that's exactly what they did. But they did it in a Sue way. And I think one of the things that gets to me a lot with holiday specials is that they just, you know, they try to tug your heartstrings and you know, make bad people do wonderful things just because of the spirit of the holidays. And what I loved was when we had that moment at the end when Schuster is not alone and Sue has organized them all the kids to come in and do up a tree and give them presents and things like that. It still saves it. They saved it from being a purely saccharine moment, by having that little conversation at the end between Sue and Schuster, where he says to her, "Well, Sue, I thought you hated Christmas." And she says, "No, well, I don't hate Christmas. I just hate you."
And
yeah,
she
that
gave,
was good.
She gave him the razor to shave his head. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also liked, I want to say, even though it moves into, yes, even though it does move into the Christmassy warmth thing, I liked the moment where Brittany meets Santa a la Beast. Actually, I liked that scene. Also, because I think Beast really works for that type of, that kind of, even though it is the obvious tugging your heartstrings thing, I don't know. I think that actress really brings it for me.
I actually have to say that worked for me. Like, her Beast being Santa Claus and having that conversation with Brittany, and then actually buying that special thing for for his legs.
Which in reality would cost something like $100,000. Yeah. There's no way she'd be able to get that. But you know, we'll leave that alone.
Yeah, right. She's a secret heiress from, but she likes to coach football.
Right,
yeah, high school football coach's salary can't afford that, but yeah.
Yeah, all right, let's move on to Modern Family.
Also good, but not as good as the week before. I would say still good. I love this show, but I thought, you know, the week before was so great, but this one, oh, it was good. You know, had some good moments. What did you think?
Well, actually I liked everything except this time I thought the weak link was Mitchell and Cam with the whole baby biting.
Oh, I've been wanting to bring this up and I have not brought this up with you. So it'll be great. I can bring it up live on a podcast. Livia has a theory that she thinks, I don't know what we were talking about. We were talking about some show. And I was like, that kid sucks. And you're like, you know, let me tell you who sucks. Lily the baby.
Yes, and I still believe that's true. That baby sucks.
No, you know what it is? I was watching this particular episode. As you know, as is common practice with television shows, a lot of times when you have a baby, you at least have twins or you have more. Like right. You have babies that kind of look alike. From what we know about Modern Family, Lily is played by twins. It's two girls. And I was watching this particular episode, and at times I noticed what you were talking about. I was like, yeah, you know, she does kind of just stare off blankly. But then other times, in particular, I'm thinking of the scene where it's an example where basically the whole their plot is that Louie is biting other kids, right?
Right.
And so Mitch and Cam both are like, well, she's doing that because of you. And then they do a flashback. There's a flashback where you see Mitch is basically like he's coming from the kitchen to the dining room and he's using his mouth to like cork open a bottle of wine and rip open a bag of potato chips. The Lily in that scene is spot on. Like it looks like a little kid with it's like, what the heck is my dad doing? It's like her head turns. But then in the following scene, they're like holding her and she has the blank expression. So I bet one of those kids is a better actor than the other. I think one is fine and the other one is just blank, but because they're twins, you know, that's the package. So anyways, that's my theory.
I have never seen the one that you're talking about, the connect. I've only seen the blank one. So my theory is both of them suck, but my only thing is, as a baby, the only job the baby has to do is look at the person who's holding them. That's it.
Right, which in this shot, she does.
For that one shot, but if you watched anyway, we're getting off topic. I'm sorry, but that's my frustration is that baby does not look at them. Like whenever the scenes are going on.
I thought it was an okay episode. I mean, my favorite thing was probably the stuff with Phil. What's Ed O'Neill's character's name?
Jay.
Like Phil and Jay, and just how like Jay is like, you know, you got to be a man, got to take your parking spot. And the guy, of course, so this guy takes their parking spot, and the guy's like, my dog died today, and like, you know, that was all pretty good. Like that's probably that to me. I think that was my favorite of the three plot lines.
That's because whenever the two families are together, that's always good when they mix the families. So I thought that they obviously had a stronger point. But what was great was Jay was like, you got to be a man. You got to stand up. But he's like, I did it. I chased him. I chased him and I got him. He's like, what'd you get him with? With this bottle of cologne. And he's like, he's like, yeah, no, man, that's not
and,
it.
Well, Jay always does that. And we're back.
And he was kind of like, he's like, no, but I got all up in his face with it. And he's like, yeah, all right. No. And yeah, I like the brothers. They're not brothers. They're cousins.
Manny and the other one.
Yeah. Luke. They were dressed alike, and they were like, you can't wear the same thing I am wearing, and it's my color, and all that. That was pretty funny. But the main thing was that Gloria and Claire were having this whole, you know, fight, and they were fighting for different reasons over the same thing. And I actually, because they were showing it from Claire's perspective, so I totally understood what her thing. She was like, this is my thing, and I was like, wait a minute. Wasn't Halloween your thing?
I thought that too, yeah.
She was like, this is my thing. This is the only thing I have. And I was like, that would have been more poignant if we hadn't had her have that exact same comment.
Well, I'm wondering
Halloween.
If that's the point. Is that how she's going to defend her argument? She's always going to say, that's my thing, you know?
Right, that's true. But I actually, once Gloria said why she was doing what she was doing, I was like, I actually felt more sympathetic to Gloria.
Yeah.
Because her whole thing is everybody just sees her, what she looks like, and they assume things about her, and she wanted to interact with people so they would actually get to know her. And I was pretty valid.
I was also just thinking, maybe the reason that the Mitch and Cam storyline was also weaker, you know, the acting of the two Lilies notwithstanding, is because really that has nothing to do with the rest of it, does it?
No, it had nothing to do with the main plot.
Because the other one, Gloria and Claire, they're setting up the dance that the two boys are going to, which is why they're at the department store. So that's all that overlaps.
Oh, by the way, Luke showing up at the beginning of the episode wearing a suit that was like two sizes too small was fantastic. He was like, so this suit's okay, right? He was like, yes, and he's going to the mall with you. That was all pretty good. All right, Modern Family, still thumbs up. A couple of weaknesses, but I still think the show's is still the best comedy. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Next one up is Big Bang, which you crap on all the time.
No, I do that. I love the first two seasons of Big Bang Theory. I think season 3 and 4, while I still like it, haven't been as strong for me. But I do like Amy Fowler, and she's a big part of this episode, so I was happy with her.
I like the fact that they've now developed two groups. They have the boys and the girls.
Yeah, I totally like that. Yeah. No, but I didn't like, kind of like you said, Mitch and Cam, the whole plot of like Wolowitz and Puthur Pali wrestling, I didn't care at all. I was like, who cares? Like, it started off funny with the whole Rat Man comic book, but just like you said with Mitch and Cam and Modern Family, that plot did nothing for me.
Yeah, especially at the end and all they're doing is circling each. If they had actually wrestled, that might have been more interesting, but
yeah,
because
I
they
agree.
Didn't, I was like, all right, I'm sleepy now. But the storyline with Farrah Fowler and having her first sexual arousal in her life was hysterical because she's trying to analyze her symptoms. And she's like, he was like, alien parasite.
Let's not dismiss that alien parasite theory.
Well, what was so great is she was like, so where would I have come in contact with an alien parasite? You know, that was all pretty good. And
of course, we're supposed to think that Sheldon, when he's like, well, maybe she just needs to have sex, because remember, he has the conversation with Penny. We're supposed to think, oh, this is his moment. You know, he's going to step up. And, of course, he doesn't.
Well, what was great was I liked the fact that she was aroused by this guy. She goes to talk to him, and she's all nervous or whatever. And he starts talking, and she realizes how dumb he is. And she's like, okay, I'm over that. That was all pretty good. She's like, yeah, your brain is way too dumb for me. And she tries to hold Sheldon's hand. He's like, what are you doing? An experiment. It failed.
Actually, I like that moment, but then, yeah, of course, then it's like, and it failed. Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I thought Big Bang this week was all, I mean, I'd say half of it was good, but it also stayed with the half, which was Sheldon. Sheldon's always my favorite character, and his storyline was good. Him and Sarah Farrah, I have to say her whole name, because that's how he says her name. I can't, like, just call her one name.
Yeah, I would say, I think in general, Sheldon is my favorite active character, and I think Penny is my favorite reactive character. Penny, I usually like the way she reacts to the situation, and Sheldon is the one who concocts these situations that I think are so ridiculous. So I think those are my two, they're probably my two favorite characters.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Vampire Diaries.
And last one until 2011, right?
Right, and I will reiterate, record the marathon if you're not watching the show yet so that you may watch season two. All right. Now we
Does
will
Allison
talk-
watch it?
No. I have not gotten into it yet.
Record this week's marathon so that you might watch it later. All right.
Okay, now when does the marathon start?
On Monday.
Monday
for basically for 2 hours every day all week. So Monday through Friday.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're going to play 10 episodes of season two.
Okay, so my turn to get caught up.
Yeah, well, don't watch season two now. Just record it and then watch season one and then watch season two. Because you can't just jump into Vampire Diaries. It doesn't work like that.
Okay, so they're not showing the marathon from the very beginning onward?
No, they're just showing season two. But season one's out on DVD and it's out on a lot of places you can get it. So
I don't think it's on Instant. I think it's just DVD and Blu-ray, I think.
Right, and other places that...
yes, okay. You know, we neither endorse nor talk about discuss, but
episode.
But I thought, oh, good.
Go talk. What I'm saying, go talk about the episode.
Oh no, I thought it was good. I mean, I like Vampire Diaries, so I mean, I don't know if that was like best episode ever, but I mean, it was good, and it's interesting. I was kind of hoping we were going to meet who is the big bad that
Klaus. It's Klaus. It's too early to meet Klaus.
Really? Well, because I knew this was the big break, I was like, oh, maybe the last shot is Klaus, and that's the big... You know, because they kind of do that with television shows, where they're like, okay, now we're going on winter break, but we're going to tease it, where you go, aha, that's Klaus. Like, well, so I kind of figured we were going to see Klaus. So because they didn't do that, I was kind of like, what the hell? Like, but that's fine. I mean,
well, my question, do you believe Elijah?
I believe Elijah in the sense that, like, you know, like making the deal with the devil. I mean, didn't we see that... You know, the first time we meet him, doesn't he make some bargain with the other girl, and then he rips the guy's head off?
Oh, that's true. That's true. But I think he worded his deal with her very carefully.
Right. That's exactly it. That's why I'm like, well, he will honor it to what his literal words are, but that doesn't mean he can't, you know, change it in a more sinister way. I mean, clearly I don't trust him. I mean, he's pretty, you know, of course not. Like, actually, that was all good. And I actually kind of felt bad for Catherine at the end of the episode. My question...
That's kind of weird. I did too. That's kind of strange. Yeah, I had that...
A lot of the episodes seem to be that, like, you know... So, Elena makes a deal with Elijah, and then, at the same time, Bonnie is with that new guy trying to break the curse of the Moonstone, and we think that the curse is broken, but then at the same time we see that the werewolf dude is still clearly turning into a werewolf. And I was like, well, okay, why is he turning? What's going on with that?
Well, no, though. Well, first of all, you got to remember the Moonstone, all it does is it doesn't break the curse like they won't ever turn into werewolves again. It changes it them being linked to the moon and the vampires being linked to the sun. That's all it
right,
does. So they're still going to be...
Well, then wouldn't he stop changing at that point because it was a full moon?
I don't know. It still wouldn't. He would still be able to change it to a werewolf, but I think it would be voluntarily. Maybe
well,
I don't
exactly,
know.
But I don't
and
think
that's not,
he, at that point
yeah.
was wanted to voluntarily
well,
change.
Well, and the thing is I knew that it was too early to destroy the Moonstone too. I was like, that.
Oh yeah, yeah,
not
totally,
destroyed.
Totally. So it doesn't surprise me when they're like, "Did you get it?" So I was like, "Oh, of course not. Yeah, of course it's not really destroyed." You know, but as far as the other thing, so you have Stefan and Catherine in the cave, and then you've got that scene that they teased where it looks like they're making out, and of course it's because now we learn that I guess Catherine can put herself in your head.
That's not new. That's always been a power. Damon has done that to Stefan a bunch of times. That's not new at all.
And give me an example. What am I forgetting?
He put in his... It was the middle of season one. Damon was still mostly evil. And he went into Stefan's dreams, and Stefan dreamed that Damon killed Elena. He also put in his dream one time that he and Elena were making out.
Oh, that's okay.
So it's not, and he told
yeah,
him
right,
they
you're
did
right.
it
I
because
forgot about that. You're right.
Because his defenses were low because he wasn't drinking blood and he and Daemon was more powerful and obviously Catherine's more powerful. So
yeah, I gotta say it's I know it's a CW show which doesn't get a lot of respect and everything, but is the woman who plays Catherine / Elena, is it Nina Dorb? Is that her name?
I don't know her name.
But I gotta say, man, I mean, like, okay, maybe she's not like on the level of Terry O'Quinn on Lost or whatever, where, you know, he was basically playing two types of people at one point. But she's really good. Like, I always know who it is. I never go, wait, is that Catherine? Or, like, I always know specifically that's Elena, that's Catherine.
Yeah, you can tell within 5 seconds of looking at her. Yeah, it's really, she's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, I mean, you could say arguably in the beginning, part of it in the beginning was they dressed differently, the hairstyle was different. That's true. But at the point they're at now, they don't really do the visual cues. It's more like the performance sells it, you know?
Right.
I was wondering how the cave worked, because at the end of the episode, it looks like Elijah's like, all right, man, you guys are free. So Stefan's like, ha-ha, I'm leaving the cave. And then he looks at Catherine, he does that special move where, like, he glamours her.
Yeah.
So is that why she's not leaving, or is she actually stuck there?
She is stuck there because they lowered the shield, but only to allow Stefan through. Because she hit the shield.
Oh, then it just goes back up.
Right.
Okay, so it's not like she's stuck in that eye thing. It's more like they just put the shield down for a second, and then he leaves or whatever.
But he also glamoured her too, that she can't, even if they drop the shield, she still wouldn't be able to leave the cave until he allowed her to.
Okay, all right. So the only thing I'm a little concerned with is, I was never really a big fan of the werewolf dude, and hey, I sympathize with the fact that he doesn't know that his uncle is actually dead, because they introduced a new werewolf character, you know, this woman. And actually, there's like a bar scene where they're trying to get her to drink Wolfbane.
No, it's not Wolfbane, it's Wolfbane.
Or Wolfbane. That's all good, I like all that. I'm concerned that Caroline, who's one of my favorite characters, I kind of like that she, you know, she's with that other guy who works at the bar.
Oh, Matt.
Now, really kind of feels like they're pushing them into the room. Because basically, because she's a vampire, she's there while the wolf guy is changing. And he's like, you got to leave. She's like, no, I'll stay with you. And I'm like, oh, man, they're totally going to move them into romance territory.
That's pretty obvious. And I like that, actually, because
no, I don't want her to be with the wolf guy. I like her with the other. I mean, the wolf guy, I like him more than I used to. But I like the other. What's wrong with the other guy? He's a nice guy.
He is a nice guy, but he's Xander. He's the only guy with no powers. He's the only guy with no powers, and he's the only guy that doesn't know what's going on in the town.
Yeah,
and
Xander without the rape scenes. But, you know, like,
what scenes?
Remember you always said you didn't like Xander because he, you know, because the, didn't you say that?
No, I didn't like Xander because he lied and betrayed Buffy. That was my issue. But the issue on this is I like Matt. He's a nice guy. He's kind of interesting. But I also really like Tyler now, which is amazing considering I hated that guy before. So I really like Tyler. And the thing is, Tyler needs her more. He really,
yeah,
really needs her.
I know what you're saying. I don't know. I like Matt and Caroline.
I do too. But you know what? And it's not even Matt's fault that they broke up. She broke up with him to protect him now that she's a vampire. So,
right, I know.
So there's that. So, but, my thing that I wanted to bring up really quick, though, is that we have the new vamp that got bit by the werewolf. And they were like, oh, it's, you know, it's healing. You're fine. Oh, it's just a myth. The werewolves probably made it up. It's all good. And no.
No, but she's not dying.
Yes, she is. Yes,
is she changing into some weird hybrid?
No,
is that what it is?
No, I think she's dying. It's like some virus or something she's got, because you could see stuff kind of move, like little bugs or something kind of moving under her skin, and her skin's all flaking off and it's all looking desiccated. I think she's dying, but I think it's going to take, basically the myth is not a myth. A werewolf bite will kill a vampire.
But it's not in 5 seconds.
Right. And so it looks like it's going to take a little longer than that. But because I remember when I was watching it, and she was like, oh, it healed, it's fine, it's probably just a myth. And I was like, oh, that's disappointing. But then, But then it's not, because it looks like she is going to die. And I was like, cool.
Actually, I kind of like her with Damon. I kind of like that Damon finally has, like, somebody that's kind of evil and kind of also, obviously, they're both attractive. You know, so actually, I kind of don't mind them together. So,
except that she had a very valid point, which is Damon's in love with Elena.
Yes, yeah, that's true. But then she was like, friends with benefits. So I was like, all right. See, like, that doesn't bother me, like, the Caroline thing, because I think of Damon and that girl as, like, they're just, you know, they're older. They're just like, whatever. Whereas, like, you kind of think of the high school kids as more this kind of, like, you know, true love. Like, so it's a different way of looking at them, I guess. So, but you know, no good. I'm, you know, I can't wait for, it's not till end of January, right? It's like January 27th.
Pretty much everything is off the air until the end of January.
Wait, why don't they do first or second week of January?
I don't know, but this has been the case since the history of television. Where have you been?
Well, I mean, the first week is New Year's, so there's still holiday stuff.
Yeah,
so.
But most shows don't come back till the end of January, because then there's February sweeps, remember? So, yeah, stuff doesn't come back until...
Gives me my chance to finish up Burn Notice and Deadwood, so that's good.
And Spartacus...
And Spartacus, yes. A lot of television shows I need to finish. But right. But overall, Vampire Diaries, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of my favorite shows, so I really like it.
Oh, and we forgot to mention that Elena and Stefan got back together at the end of the episode.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. That was nice, too. Yeah, they're a couple that I'm happy for them, so.
Yeah, I find that now I'm kind of bored with them. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I don't want them to play it up too much, but I don't necessarily want them to date other people. That's the tricky thing with television relationships. Like, I agree with you. If the couple's too happy, it gets boring. But that doesn't mean I necessarily want to give Stefan, like, a new girlfriend or give her...
No. And I wouldn't believe that either. All right. So, Vampire Diaries, of course, thumbs up. I don't think we've given a bad review to Vampire Diaries.
No, I don't think we ever have.
But I actually was afraid this one was going to suck, and it didn't. So, I was really happy about that. Because from the preview, I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. But it really wasn't. So, thumbs up on that. All right, next up is Fringe. So, what you think?
I actually really enjoyed the episode. I mean, yeah, it was back to standalone Monster of the Week, but they still had, you know, interesting stuff having to do with the overall story arc. I liked where they were going character wise with it, and actually, even the Monster of the Week part still had stuff in it that I thought was interesting. The tableau of looking at this essentially dead girl being raised up like a puppet, you know, with her ballet shoes on and things like that. That was just very creepy. It was a great eerie visual.
Yeah, that was super, super creepy. I actually couldn't watch it. I fast-forwarded. I was like, this is... And then he's crying while he's doing it. I was like, oh, man. That guy was... He just seriously... And then he's so polite as he removes your organs. And he apologizes. And I was just like, no. But the good stuff of the episode, because I actually thought the Monster of the Week was kind of simple and kind of boring, because we've kind of seen some of this before.
Mm-hmm.
What made the episode interesting was Walter trying to tell Peter, oh, you got to tell Olivia what's going on, because lies are bad, as I've shown. He's like, don't follow my example. Don't go down that road. And he's like, Dad, I don't want to have this conversation. No, this conversation right now I don't want to have. So all of that was all the character stuff. I thought was really good, and Olivia trying to pretend that she's fine when she's really not fine.
Yeah, the scene where she was going through her closet and just eventually tearing everything off the hangers and peeling all the sheets off the bed and just collapsing because she, I mean, everything, including her little favorite MIT shirt, has essentially been violated by this.
No, the MIT shirt, that was the MIT shirt is Peter's.
Oh, that was his?
Yeah, that was the whole point.
Yeah, you're right, it would be.
Yeah, the whole
point. And that was something that, you know, I mean, she just kind of lost it at that point because she realized, you know, I mean, she's doing his laundry. But this woman is in every facet of her life. She took everything. And it's this sense of violation.
Right.
That just gets to her because nothing is hers anymore. It's all been lived in and polluted, really, by this you know, all other Olivia.
Right. And I liked how she got to the point. She was trying to say, you know, everything's cool, but obviously she's angry with Peter. And mm-hmm. she's trying to pretend that she's not, but it's coming through. And then at the very end, she's like, you know what? You should have been able to tell.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I would have been able to tell. You should have been able to tell.
Well, I think that was part of the audience's thing was that, you know, Peter, what the hell is wrong with you? This is not her. And there were so many clues. And, you know, as we've pointed out in the past, he was thinking with his other head.
Right.
And that's so patently obvious when you look over the whole thing, but it gets to her that
he didn't know
that somehow he should have known that's not my Olivia, and that just
problem with that theory is they hadn't gotten intimate yet. They Prior. Hadn't gotten to the point where he knew all her little tics and knew all her little, you know, how she likes her breakfast, you know, all the little things that couples know about each other. They hadn't gotten to that point
because
they
weren't
a couple.
But she's still going to feel like,
right.
You know,
I mean,
some
of it is legitimate and some of it isn't. I think it's kind of in between. Mm-hmm. But I told, and he basically has screwed up his chance with her, is pretty much what she's saying to him.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, because I did like them together, but it's one of those TV things where they've got to stretch out how long it takes before they become a couple. So, and
exactly.
And that's fine. I'm cool with that. Make Peter earn it. Make him suffer a little bit. But, yeah, I thought they did a good job with the character stuff and the character interaction. And now, because of that, I'm slightly curious what the faux Olivia thinks that... Because I don't think she knew that the other Olivia had taken her spot. She just kind of probably assumed that they locked her up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And none of her people miss her. Everybody thinks she's been there. And I'm like, huh,
yeah.
Does she feel the same thing? So that's kind of interesting. I'd kind of be interested to find that out, but mm-hmm. I'm not holding my breath on that. Oh, and we forgot to mention that the Observer showed up again.
Yes. Very, very interesting. You know, and he's communicating, obviously, with one of his other compatriots. And his one comment is, yes, he's still alive.
Yeah.
So that was ominous and very interesting.
Well, I think the Observers, their thing is they can hop from alternate reality to alternate reality. I think that's their ability. That's my guess.
Right.
So apparently, maybe one other people, because you don't know who they're looking at. If they're looking at Peter or Walter, one of them is dying or has to die in the alternate universes or something. I don't know. But that does look like that's going to be the next episode, so that looks like that's going to be pretty cool. And
mm-hmm.
I'm glad that if we only have one standalone in between the awesomeness that has been Fringe, that's fine. I'll take the one, and let's kick into the next storyline. That's great.
Which, and like you said, the previews for that look really, really fantastic.
Right.
And obviously, it's going to be Observer heavy.
Right, and I'm happy. That's the Observers are great.
Oh, I love them. They're fantastic. And I really am looking forward to that. The thing that's maddening, of course, is that it's going to be on hiatus until the end of January.
Right.
So we're not going to know until then.
Yes.
But I think that, you know, there's a lot to look forward to.
All right. On that note, let's move on to Supernatural.
Yep.
So this, I have to say, they did this in the nick of time because this, I was at the end of my rope for Sam. I was ready to almost stop watching the show. Like, I really, really, really didn't like Sam for this
yeah.
whole episode.
Well, I think that was the point, though. I mean, they've been cranking it up more and more and more. And in this episode, he totally crossed the line into anything that's acceptable to keep around.
Right. And basically, I thought that Death was going to tell him he was going to have to kill... that Dean was going to have to kill Sam. That's where I thought they were going, and then they didn't. I liked the whole... I think Dean was naive to think that as Death, all he would have to do is kill some bad guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I mean, I knew exactly where this was going to go.
Right, and he should have too. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I really... I don't think that Dean is that naive. But
no.
It is a difference between intellectually understanding that children die and being the one that does it.
Right.
I get that. But as soon as she started saying, okay, there are going to be consequences to you letting her live, and I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know what it was, but I knew it wasn't going to be a good thing. And Death is awesome. I have to say, the actor that they have playing Death, he's a little skinny, scrawny guy, but man, he's intimidating.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah. I loved him from the very first time they brought him on.
Oh, yeah, I did too. And
I was actually kind of worried that with this episode, we'd start seeing too much of him and it would diminish the power of the character.
Nope.
And it did not at all. He was just amazing through the whole episode.
Yeah.
And still just as intimidating as the first time.
Right, and he was like, oh, so you're going to bargain with me to give me my ring? What makes you think I don't know where it is? And he was like, he's like, okay, now you've lost all your bargaining power. What you got?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all that was really good. I think the tension in the scene where Sam is hunting Bobby, I literally almost stopped watching it a couple times because it was so tense. It was making me so uncomfortable. And that's brilliant. I mean, that's good television. To where I was really scared that something might happen to Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Well, it almost did. I mean, literally, I mean, when you talk about the nick of time, I mean, Dean could not have cut it closer.
Right.
Could not. And from that point on, you know that there's no tolerating Sam any longer in the state that he's in because he's crossed the line over from sociopathic to psychopathic.
Right.
So,
well,
you know,
he had, because he was like, well, whatever I have to do to save myself, that's whatever I have to do. Mm-hmm. So even when he's pleading at the end and begging them not to do it, I was like, I got nothing for you. I got no sympathy. And the preview for Supernatural was bizarre because it didn't tell you anything. And it was just like random sentences put together. I was like, what the heck was that? But I'm excited to see what Sam is like now. With his soul back intact, that will require some acting from Mr. Jarrett, I'm afraid, because he is not Shakespeare. Oh no, not Shakespeare. Give me a good actor, Marlon Brando. There you go. So I am a little bit afraid of that, but at least he's not going to be a character that I despise so much that I'm ready to stop watching the show. Like, if they had gone on much longer with soulless Sam, I would have been done.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because the one thing that Death said to him is, you know, I'm putting up a block, and it's going to itch, don't scratch that. so you kind of wonder, how long is this going to be before something really bad happens? But it looks like they're not going to address that right away because the previews for the next episode, which, again, is the end of January, look like one of the... It looks like one of those standalone light episodes.
Right, because, I mean, then they do that because if you've been dark too long on Supernatural, they always give you a light one.
Right.
And this is probably the lightest.
But it doesn't look like, you know, we're going to see too much in the way of consequences right away.
Right, and that's fine because now we've got two things going on. You got the war in heaven... And then you've got the thing that Death has now put them onto with something's going on with the souls.
Yes, so, I thought that was interesting,
yeah,
too.
So that's, I was like, all right, so we got all that going on. And, of course, they have to now go kill their grandfather. So thumbs up for Supernatural, finally. I mean, this episode was really good in the tension and the emotions it made me go through, which I shouldn't be going through over a TV show, but I was very... I was just really upset with that whole thing with Bobby. That was freaking me out a little bit.
Yeah.
But
I thought the whole thing was just put together in an excellent way. It was paced beautifully. It was performed beautifully. And I really, really loved this episode.
Yeah. I thought it was great, too. All right. That's it for Supernatural. that wraps us all up for this week's podcast.
Yes, so.
As usual, you guys know where to send the feedback at tvcampfire@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at tvcampfire. We're on Facebook and a million other places, so let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. We'll talk about you on the podcast. And talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.